Candyman. Now, does that work on a Zoom call when you're looking at yourself?
Bruh, I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
This man facing the camera.
Oh, man, I had to mess with Deshaun real quick before the podcast, man. Yo, welcome to the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. I'm your host, CL.
I'm Sean.
I'm Derek.
And today, we are doing none other than that 1992 film, Candyman. I guess before we really dive in deep into the movie, we talked about Candyman off air. And Sean, you have a particular relationship with this movie. So do you mind sharing a little bit? Because I feel like this might frame some of the conversation.
Yeah, so I fucked up and watched this movie way too young. This movie came out in 1992. I was 8. Caught it by myself at the house. Wrong thing to do. It's not the first horror movie that I've seen, but you talking about a movie that fucked me up? Candyman would be on the top of that list. Let's just say I watched it the first time. I probably watched it a second time to see if it would kind of wear off. Like, I'd be cool. But yeah, Candyman fucked me up for a while. You know, brother had a couple of sleepless nights. I'll say restless nights.
Okay.
You know, it didn't lose no sleep, but mofo was concerned. I was concerned.
That's ill, man. That is so ill. So, Candyman is an urban legend. And for me, I think he might be an important one because he was the first black one that I had ever heard of. So you say this man's name 5 times into the mirror. He comes behind you and appears and takes you out. Now, I still didn't quite catch all of it, even after the origin story explained maybe like 15 minutes into the movie. I'm still not sure of all of his motivation because it seems a little convoluted, if you ask me. But if we are going on the strength of things becoming urban legends, as we will discover later on, I think it is just what it's supposed to be. It took me a while to come along to it, but Mr. Tony Todd's voice really made me understand where the Candyman came from. So the movie is really about Helen. She's a graduate student in Chicago studying urban legends. Now let's just start right there. The white woman who is studying urban legends with her friend Bernadette. So I guess this is a thing that usually bothers a lot of my melanated people is when we get the white point of view on a story that's really about us. Now, did any of y'all feel that at all going back into this movie? Or Derek, you know, for the first time, did you feel any of that?
Well, no, just because for one, I didn't know that Candyman was an actual urban legend. I thought it was just a movie. You know, I had no idea. So, I didn't feel anything about it. I just thought it was a way for them to tell the story.
It didn't really, like, smack me until, like, I was just doing a little research. You know, I read a few Rotten Tomatoes reviews, and I thought the phrasing was funny. It was like, it comes from a white eye with a black sided eye. And I thought that was kind of intricate because that did describe the way that I digested this movie. It's like I'm following this person that's not of the environment, basically coming in on like an exploration to find out if Candyman is real. When we meet Helen, she is talking with her husband, who I could tell from jump was a sleazeball. I could totally tell when the professor is dating the graduate student, it's always going to end up wrong. And of course, he had a fresh new one too on Tuck. When we meet Helen's friend Bernadette and they decide to go into the projects and check out this urban legend, and she tells Helen, why do you have us dressed like cops? That may have been one of the most accurate things in life ever, because I have been in that exact situation. You will try to tell a white person this is absolutely a bad idea, and they will not care. They do not understand when it's a bad idea for a black person to do a certain thing. And she told her, like, we dressed like cops. We about to get us messed up. So I guess we could go ahead and start talking about the folklore around Candyman. So what do y'all think about the child slave that was basically stung to death and left with no hand and coming back to revenge the atrocities that have been done to him? So it's like, is that something? Could y'all buy into that urban legend?
I could buy into it if they had focused his killing a bit more, right? Because I'm guessing he got taken out by some white folks because he fell in love with a white woman and got her pregnant, right? Right. So if they'd have focused it and be like, all right, he kills white men because those are the people who killed him, took his hand and all that stuff, then it would have made more sense. But either way, I did like the backstory. It was intriguing enough to the point where it made me like want to explore it more.
So my thing is a little similar to Derek's, which is I did not like the fact that I couldn't really follow his logic for the things that he was doing. Like, I kind of understood that he was spilling innocent blood later through the movie. Like, it didn't really matter who. It's just he had to have the blood. When I actually went through the whole movie, it made sense because what we actually have is literally an American God type figure. You know, I don't know if y'all watched that show on Stars. I say that because in American Gods, the thing that is explained is the gods only exist if people believe that they exist, or they give them the praise or the attention, or that mind, just that thought of them actually helps them exist and become strong. And that's kind of what the Candyman ethos is. It's like, as long as there's always a rumor or a whisper that he exists, then people will always respect it. And that will keep him alive. Things have to be done in order to keep him alive. And so I did not put that together until pretty much the entire movie. I think that part of it could have been a little bit smoother. I think they could have not extrapolated that so much with, you know, the Tony Todd voiceovers over the entire movie. They could have taken it and shrunk that down to, you know, a 10-minute sequence and kind of really set you up for who Candyman is. Like it did need like a little bit of a sequel. You know, it did need like more than a white dude with bad teeth at a, you know, smoking a cigarette telling us his story. Like, I would have liked to get like a whole sequence of him becoming Candyman and explaining like, this is what must be done for me to keep living. Because if nobody thinks about you anymore or nobody respects you, then you no longer exist. You just, like, you die as a god. And that's like one of the things that, you know, is explored in American Gods. It's like the ones that used to be worshipped in the 1900s is not the same as the ones right now. And Candyman wants to make sure that you respect him. So innocence must be taken because of the things that was done. That's what I got.
That's interesting. See, I got a similar thing from it where, because he does say at some point, like, she ruined his congregation or something to that effect because she didn't believe. So he had to take her, you know, basically make an example. But the part where it got confusing to me was that at some point, I'm guessing it turns out that she's the reincarnation of the woman he fell in love with when he was alive originally. Because he's talking about it was always you, this, that, and the other. So how'd it go from, I'm going to kill you, I have to kill you, I really want to kill you, to, oh no, we're going to be together eternally? And it was damn near sexual. It was like a sexual tension at that part where he was about to kill her on the altar. It was just kind of confusing for me. I'm like, does he want to kill her? Does he want to smash? Like, well, what's going on?
Yeah, Candyman get up a little bit. A little hook, man. So I'm assuming that they found that bathroom that she goes into looking for Candyman already like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that possibly the worst bathroom that you ever seen?
More childhood trauma. Now, if you ain't never paid attention to a bathroom when you walked into it, I bet you I have for the rest of my life. Because that was some nasty shit. I ain't seen no repugnant and shit like that in my life before I saw this movie.
It's not the worst I've seen.
Oh, it's not the worst? Geez.
Nah, not the worst I've seen.
Damn.
When I went to live in Thailand for a year, bruh, that shit shocked the fuck out of me. The first time I had to use a public restroom, like one, there ain't no toilet paper nowhere. So you got to travel around with your own toilet paper. Two, I had to take a shit that night. Right. So we're out and I had to use the toilet and the bathroom was a hole in the ground. Mind you, there's no light. There's little snakes and shit slithering around on the ground.
No.
Spiders, cobwebs. You can't see nothing. There's some kind of liquidy type substance on the walls and shit. You try not to touch any damn thing. And it smelled like death. Mm-hmm. It smelled crazy. That movie is nothing compared to what I saw in Thailand.
Oh my God. Like,
I feel like I deserve the Doing What You Got to Do award. I could take a shit anywhere after living in Thailand for a year. I give no fucks about bathrooms now. None.
While we talk about the bathroom, when she lifts up the last seat and the bees come out and she does not absolutely freak the fuck out and become a believer, like, how, I'm like, Sean, I know you probably was, you know, terrorized by that, but would that been enough to have made you a believer in real life?
Yeah.
See, for me, I can't say that just because I saw some bees, it would be enough for me to run away. You know, I can't say that. I probably wouldn't have put two and two together, especially if I ain't know all of his backstory like that. If I just heard, oh yeah, he got stung by a bunch of bees. Somebody put bees in the bathroom, whatever. But the black part of me wouldn't have been investigating that shit in the first place. So
there you go.
This is very much true. This is why it is hard to make horror films starring black people. Mm-hmm. Because it's just not plausible that we would do that shit. Mm-mm. Like, that is like a fatal flaw. And we talk about, you know, why we don't be in a lot of different films. It's just like, that's just not real.
Yeah.
I'm
good with black people not being in horror movies because a lot of this shit is just not real. It's like, yo, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Real talk. You hear one you won't even get the high out.
Yeah.
My ass.
Exactly. Would have been gone. You talking about something like Friday the 13th. How many sequels has Friday the 13th had? How many encounters at Camp Crystal Lake have there been? All I needed to know was that there was one.
Mm-hmm.
And my ass would have never been there. As a black person, as me, all I needed to know was that there was some connection between bees and Candyman. And the first time I saw one, I'm out of here. I'm good.
That's real spill. Like, I know me, I would have been done because I know bees don't grow in the toilet. They don't. Yes, that was the problem. Like, you know, all that shit. Derek said somebody put some bees in. Like, nah, nigga, that's a swarm. Like, ain't no swarm just going to live in no toilet. Like, that's definitely the Candyman, and it's time to go, you know. So let me backtrack. So, of course, the reason why she's there in the first place is because she met Vanessa Williams' character with her baby in the projects. You know, she was very skeptical of the whole thing, but she was important, of course, later on in the movie, because somehow the Candyman knows when you talk about the Candyman. And I think that's another thing that we learn about in the movie is you don't talk about Candyman or the Candyman's going to touch you. He might not kill you, but he gonna touch you. And I think that's the lesson that we figured out later on, because why take her bait? She was talking about that Candyman. Jumping back, Helen gets knocked the fuck out. Did y'all expect to see a project man with a hook?
No, I didn't expect it. But after I saw it, I was like, you know what? I could respect his hustle. Like, he just going to be like, you know what? I'm the Candyman. Fuck it. Ain't nobody coming on my territory. I'm going to go find me a hook. Everybody going to be scared because they're going to hear about all the crazy ish that I've been doing over these years. I got this whole territory locked down. So I ain't expect it, but I could respect it.
I thought that was interesting. That was a good touch, you know, because that might throw you off the scent. If you were a little skeptical, you see the bees And then you meet a dude that's menacing with the hook. And it's like, oh, okay. So the Candyman really is not an urban legend. It's just a dude out here walking around with a hook. That's not even real. They caught him. He's in jail. Everything's fine. Of course, we know it's not, because the Candyman has to make you into a believer. One of the things that I could really appreciate in this movie is the fact that when Candyman needs to come and tell his part, he's not even really waiting on you to call him when it came to Helen. That was the one thing I thought was interesting, because she started to just have him come for her. Like, his whole motivation was like, once you have been in the presence and you've been told and you don't believe, something must happen to you. We basically get into a spiral of events where Helen is accused of crimes. The first crime, of course, killing the dog and taking the baby. And it messes you up because you think the baby is dead too. And we did we ever figure out how he got the hypnosis powers? Somehow he was able to send Helen into a trance, and she wakes up in the middle of this crime scene. And in my mind, the first thing she does when she picks up the meat cleaver is like, why you want to go to jail?
I could say with full confidence that, when did this movie come out? 92?
Yeah.
Something like that. 92. So my 9-year-old self was smart enough to know, if I wake up in the pool of blood, I ain't touching shit. I don't care if it's 1992 or 2020. I'm not touching anything. I'm just getting the hell up out of there. Hey. As fast as I can. I'm not checking to see who around me. I'm gone. Like, that's it. And you ain't never going to know I was there, because I'm probably going to strip. I'll be butt naked running down the street looking crazy if I got to. But I'm not touching anything. Right? That's one.
Look, let me say, we can look innocent and be framed guilty.
Exactly.
A white girl can be standing outside bloody as fuck with the murder weapon in her hand, and everybody running to her with a blanket. Oh, let's cover up, take care of her. So, you know.
Yo, me and my girl was watching this joint, and when the white girl had the meat cleaver, when the police showed up and the police rushed the black girl, the black girl after she got the one who got chopped with the damn meat cleaver, they rush her to restrain her first. I'm sitting there like, see, that's real life right there. The motherfuckers knew what they was doing. That's real life right there.
That was some real shit. The next time the Candyman comes to see Helen, which is at her apartment right before Bernadette shows up. And she tried to tell her, don't come in, don't come in. And she came in. Now, did Bernadette have a key, or was the door just unlocked?
Neither. The girl, she passed out. Next thing we know, Bernadette's dead. But CL, I got a question for you, bro.
What's happening?
You find out your best friend is on trial for either murder or some crazy shit like that. And it was under crazy circumstances now. They had to put him in the hospital on lockdown and all that crazy stuff. You going to see him at his apartment by yourself? Nobody around?
I guess if that paper needed to get done, that paper needed to get done, man. You know, there's no fucking way. Like, straight up, bro. Like, we're going to have to do this on the phone, email, something. Like, let me find out all the facts. Like, let me go read the case report myself before I come through. But Bernadette, I guess she was just being a good friend and going to check on her after this, you know, traumatic event. So we just don't get any update on the baby investigation. Did they stop looking for the baby?
I wouldn't say that they stopped, but it's definitely not a focal point.
Right.
The screenwriters, the producers, they pick the story, which they what's out front, what they want to go with. And honestly, I feel like that baby just got lost in the shuffle. But like, it happened, and then we don't revisit it. We don't talk about it.
But it's like a major plot point in the movie.
Plot hole.
It's like the fact that she gets arrested, there's a missing baby, and then she saves the baby. This is a swap. And that's what we learn about Helen, that she must be swapped for this baby. So the Candyman tells you that you got to come in and then the baby can live. You going in?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Just, is it my baby?
It's a project baby.
I'm sorry, yo. I can't. No. I can't take the L for somebody else's baby. I'd have been like Candyman. Can we call the mama? Can we call the daddy? Can they take the L?
Oh man. Nah. I'll
bring you some more flesh.
Nah. You the non-believer.
I can't do it. Shit.
Yeah, nah. I wouldn't take that baby place either. I ain't gonna front.
It was like you're not having that shit. Mm-mm. From what I was watching, the police didn't give a shit, you know, especially after Bernadette got killed.
Yeah.
Once she got smashed and they took all the color out of her face very fast. Yeah. Once she gets taken in, she goes all the way to the crazy house because she keeps saying that the Candyman did it. And they shoot her up with the drugs. Trevor, the husband, takes a look at her and like jets out of there. When we get to this insane asylum and Candyman jumps out and takes out the doctor, is it enough just for the doctor to go, or why wasn't it time for Helen to go in that moment if she was supposed to go?
For me, it's probably a little bit more story to tell, because I think it's after this scene, and correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there some message that comes out that gives that implication that Helen and Candyman were connected in the past? Can you do that if you take her out right now? Can you make that connection between them if you took Helen out in this point? Or would it even be worth it? Or, I mean, and we still have some other loose ends to tie up. We still don't got the baby back. We're just going to let that little man fry. So while I can see it, I honestly kind of took this scene as basically the same thing from Child's Play. This is the jump off. Now we about to find out some shit. Now some shit's about to wrap up. You know, I feel this point was necessary. I think there's still some things to do, some things left to be revealed. So it's a little too early to take Helen out.
I thought it was pivotal. And that was the point where I started seeing, okay, it's something deeper than he just wants to kill her for not believing. Like, he's got something for her. There's a history there. I don't think they had told us at that point. Like, they didn't show us the painting on the wall that she realizes is her. None of that had happened yet. But the fact that he had so many chances to kill her and he just didn't, when he just killed everyone else, no questions asked, to me, that was like, all right, he's got something for her. Like, so it was important to establish that she's important to him.
I'll tell you, we right about at the point where I about tapped out.
Really?
Did nobody tell that man to open his coat?
So, since you brought it up, what do we think of the Candyman coat?
Candyman coat, cool. With his own. Coat on, bro. Keep the coat on. You know, you ain't got to open it up. That's your private business in there. Keep it locked up.
I felt like, and I told my girl this too, when I first saw it, I was like, yo, he looks like a drag queen with that coat on. It was like, man, it was like long and flowed out at the bottom like a long skirt, like a long dress. And then it had the furry frills or whatever you call that joint, the trim on the edges and all that stuff. I was like, it looks like he's either like a 70s pimp or he's a drag queen.
A little bit more 70s pimpish for me.
I guess he must have died somewhere where it was very cold. That's the only thing I can think of. But yeah, like, this was ugly, bro. Like, I wish the Candyman was a little bit more stylish.
Yeah.
I could have appreciated that. If you would have had a badass coat, everybody would have probably did that costume.
I'm sorry. I just pulled up a picture of the coat to look at it again. And you know, the first image that popped up was him opening the damn coat. Just like, why? I don't want to see that shit. Coat was too damn big.
That was a big coat.
Like, I think that kind of leads into what some folks' perceptions of it might be. Maybe if it was slimmed down a little bit more. But the shit was too big for his little frame.
It don't even look like you could do any comfortable killing in that thing. Like, it's just so impractical for killing. Like, you can't move around in that. It's so bulky. Like, that's just, I'm looking at it now. It's just not practical.
I guess we can get back to Helen, because she's the one that sees the man take his coat and open it. and revealing his bare chest. I'm about to say, like, I don't even really know how to describe it. But between that and the bees, like the bee kiss, what kind of just like freaked you out a little bit more? Because I felt like this is the point where things became a little bit more sexualized. Candyman getting freaky with the hook, bringing it to her skirt.
Now, she seemed to be a little bit more receptive in this encounter. Like,
because now I'm just thinking about her, him opening his mouth and the bees coming back, and she just sitting there taking it. And it's just
girls love a bad boy.
Hey, shoo.
Like, was she seduced at that point? Like, would you say she had been seduced into that position?
I'd say a little bit of both. Like, she had given up all hope, and she was just kind of giving in to like the draw of this character. Like, his character, his presence was just so powerful, omnipresent, omnipotent. Like, it was just too much for her. She was like, damn, this dude might be the real deal. And I don't seem to have a choice. He already done screwed everything up. I might as well see what he's talking about.
She had escaped that asylum. And the first place she went was back home to see that her man had already replaced her, coloring the walls pink. And of course, the new girlfriend is frightened. Absolutely frightened, which I didn't consider that until I was like, oh, that's right. She did go to jail for murdering her friend and was in an asylum. So yes, it would be scary to see her there. But that part right there, when everything has seemed to be taken from her, she decided that the Candyman was the way. He kept telling her, you need to just come to me. And of course, we see the pictures on the wall, the murals, and she wakes up and sees that it says, it's always been you. Like, I'm not going to lie to y'all. Like, toward the end, I was a little bit confused as like how we were getting to where we were going. Like, did any of y'all kind of like lose track of like, I guess like tracing these events concurrently?
That was like, the only part that kind of had me. The whole thing with the baby at the end. How they go from like the baby's like a little footnote, and then all of a sudden it's the most important part. It's the most important aspect of the movie, and it's what's going to draw her in and sucker her into taking on a life as essentially the Candyman's bride. You know, so that was the only part that kind of got me. Like, why was that baby so significant to him and her?
Look, man, the whole shit was weird.
That's what I'm getting at, bro. Like, I'm trying to just see, you know, I was looking for another way to say it, but I'm just like, man, this shit just weird as fuck at the end.
You talking about urban legends, reincarnation, bees coming out mofo bodies, we doing foreplay with bees and shit, and now come into the fire with me, I'll take you and let this little baby go. It's just, it's a lot packed in there.
It's not like a super clear sequence of events, but basically she goes from getting freaky with the Candyman to going after the baby to save the baby from the Candyman right before the party starts at the bonfire. Now, did anybody catch why they were having a bonfire or the party? Was there any significance to that? Or that was just a thing in the movie to set up the end?
When was there a bonfire party?
I mean, at the end, that was where it started. Because you remember the little project kid when he brings Helen to where the Candyman was. You know, she's walking by and they say, yes, for the party later on this week.
Oh, didn't catch that. Damn.
And so that's why everybody ended up showing up and starting the fire. But I didn't catch any particular reason or why it was significant that it was just so happens to be that day when Helen goes to save this baby.
I always saw it as insignificant, more so on Helen's side. I saw it as the bonfire as a space where Candyman was going to make this big act. Like, it was either going to be Helen or the baby. And since this event was happening, this is where it was going to go down. That makes sense?
Right. This was just the moment. Of course, through some heroism, she catches the Candyman off guard. Let's him burn.
and she escapes the middle of a bonfire, fire on her back. And I did like when she came out the fire with the fire on her, and then they throw the blankets on her, and then she just like magically changes to being burnt all the way down her back. As you can tell, she definitely had the wig on. Like, they didn't even do a good job of dressing her head up. But once she gets out with the baby, Helen becomes a hero. Who would have thought at the beginning of this story that the urban legend is going to be the white woman who saved the project baby? Did not see that coming. You know, I did not see a Helen mural with the wings on it.
I can't act like I saw that to be an ending to this movie. But I'm not surprised that it happened. How many movies have we seen with the white savior helping the little project kid or kids, you know? So didn't see it coming. Wasn't totally surprised. But I was pissed off that some more people didn't die before she went out. But she kind of took care of one person I was wanting to get out of here at the very end.
I was a little just taken aback to see that coming into play. But I guess it did make a nice wrap up on Helen's character in the story. And then, of course, we see Trevor at the funeral welcoming in, you know, this Malcolm XS type of crowd coming to see Helen so they can throw the hook to the casket, into the grave, I should say.
I'm sorry. That's kind of mad disrespectful to me. They threw the hook in Helen's grave. Why? I'm sorry, I never got that. Like, I don't care if I'm fighting Jason and me and Jason kill each other, y'all bury me. Don't put Jason's mask in my fucking grave.
Like a trophy, bro. It's like a trophy.
But y'all keep that shit. Like, I'm gone. I'm gone. Y'all cool. Y'all alive because Jason gone. I'm out of here. I don't want that shit.
They may have been going for like they said, either a trophy or even that she was the new legend. Like,
yeah,
maybe that was it. Like, you know, the new, you know, the chain.
I just wouldn't have did it. I just wouldn't have did that.
You know, that was a little weird. I ain't gonna lie. Like, everything going on to the end kind of just, it's there. It's what we're gonna say. But of course, we get toward the end, and your man's Trevor. He says Helen's name in the mirror 5 times after crying about her in the bathroom. What a bitch, for one. I'm just going to say that.
Thank you.
Because, dude, you totally did not give a fuck about her.
Sure did.
Like, at no point at all. And so, like you said, Sean, he did get what he deserved. Because I guess with the power of the hook, she was able to come back when you say her name.
But that's what I don't get, though. When he was in there in that bathroom, for one, why the hell did he choose to specifically say her name? Because it didn't even sound natural.
It didn't. Helen.
And then let me turn off the lights for the fifth one. Helen. And now let me stare into the mirror. Like, why? Why? That didn't make any sense.
She did look like a badass when she came up on the screen, though. I ain't even gonna lie about that.
She looked a little scarier.
Not a shit of brick if I seen that. She wouldn't have to worry about stabbing me. I'd have been dead 2 times already.
So, going off your comment, Derek, I just looked it up. This is what Virginia Madsen said, who played Helen. She said, they originally wanted us to do Candyman 2, but they didn't like Bernie's idea for the sequel. They made the Candyman into a slave, which was terrible because the Candyman was educated and raised as a free man. Bernie wanted to make him like an African-American Dracula, which I think was so appealing to the African-American community because they finally had their own Dracula. The Candyman was a poet and smart. He wasn't really a monster. He was sort of that classical figure. One more. Said they wanted to make the movie to pair Candyman and Helen. They would fall in love, but it was turned down because they don't think the studio wanted to do an interracial love story.
Correct. I was waiting. I didn't think they was going to actually say it in the note, but yes, Absolutely. That was the only problem with this love story. Had it been Candyman and Bernadette, that shit would have flew. All right, Sean, I'm going to hand this over to you.
Ooh. So y'all know how we do. We wrap up each review by giving the film an award based off our personal enjoyment of that movie. If we love the movie, if it's one of our favorites, we'll hook it up with the Image Award. If we think it's a good movie, but not great, we'll give it a Soul Train Award. The movie is so-so, average, in our opinion. We'll knock it down, give it a Source Award. But if we toss some Candyman in the fire, burning that bitch up like poor Helen, gets a BET Award. So, Derek, I'm actually interested in yours first. First time you saw Candyman.
Yeah, so first time I saw Candyman. And I must say, I had a much better experience with Candyman than I did with my Chucky. First time watching Child's Play, Chucky, whatever you call it. So, it wasn't hot trash like Chucky was. Oh, so, man. I'm going to give it a Soul Train Award because would I watch it again? No. But it made me curious. I would love to see a prequel, and I plan on going to watch the sequels. So, Farewell to the Flesh, Jordan Peele's remake. I plan on seeing all of that off the strength of this one. So, it gets a Soul Train Award for me.
Mm. Okay.
This one needs, like, a Soul Train Award for my enjoyment and the Source Award for the writing, because I'm just a stifler for the details. Like, I don't know why, but when it comes to writing, you know, I respect somebody who can do the job and do it good. The fact that I bought into the movie after watching it, I'm going to have to give it a Soul Train Award because everything around the writing was enough to carry it. Acting was good. Some of the setup shots were pretty good. You know, even some of the risk that they were taking, like the, you know, like I could tell when it was not always Tony Todd head. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't that bad. So I give it a Soul Train Award.
Okay. So I can't be that nice. Now, I will say, I agree with a lot of the critics. Like, if you just judge this movie top to bottom, if I'm thinking about 80s and 90s horror movies, story-wise, execution-wise, probably stacks up with some of the best. But we're talking about personal enjoyment. And while this movie didn't fuck me up as an adult, I still don't want to watch this shit. So if 9-year-old Sean was here, he'd probably get his shit a BET Award. But I'm be nice. Because I'm no longer traumatized. Well, I don't want to say no longer traumatized, but a little less traumatized. It's just going to have to sit in that Source Award category. So, congratulations on putting out a great horror story, especially starring a black man. But I don't want to see this shit no more. Yeah, that wasn't fun for me. But hopefully Derek and CL had a good time looking back at the original Candyman. It's a hard pass for me. If you're going to see the new Candyman, have fun with that, because I ain't gonna be there. Next week, we're gonna shift back 2 years. We're gonna hang in 1990. And all three of us are gonna check out a movie for the first time. Death by Temptation. D-E-F. Death, not death, death. Death by Temptation, starring James Bond III, Kadeem Hardison, Bill Nunn, and Samuel L. Jackson. If you have not seen this movie, trust me, it is worth the 7-day trial on BET Plus or to pay $2.99 to rent it on Amazon Prime. Check that movie out. Catch us next week. But before we get to next week, make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at MadCapPod. Give us a like over on Facebook as well. Until next time, for my co-hosts, Derek and CL, this is your boy Sean, and we'll see you next week with 1990s Death by Temptation.
destiny had been foretold. Its fate had been forewarned. He did not know that something so sweet could be so evil. Now, the fate of mankind hangs in the balance as Kadeem Hardison, TV's Dwayne Wayne.
This honey I met the other night was bad. That Superman
and Bill Nunn from Do the Right Thing get busy in the first contemporary horror thriller of its kind. No! James Bond III's Death by Temptation. She's every man's dream and your worst nightmare.
She leaves with men and you never see them again. She drinks that holy water, she's gonna start slobbering and farting and gagging.
I'm on a mission and nobody can cramp my style. So if you can't get down, stay up the trip for a while. I don't mean to be cruel and no more.
You will now fight the beast.
Death by Temptation, a new movie from Troma. With new music by Ashford and Simpson, Melba Moore, Najee, and Freddie Jackson.